Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 17th, 2005. Today's forum is called In, From, and To Community. This forum is led by Village philosopher Stacy Judala in the Fireside Room, disc number FO-2005-15.
Oh, there's that nice smell of melting wax up there. We must be doing batiking or something down the craft room.
Those baskets.
Well, welcome to this afternoon's forum discussion. And if you came to just listen, I hope we didn't have false advertising, because we hope that you are engaged in the conversation. I'm Stacy Judala, and I have been called to this place of Holden, gone forth from this place, and been in this place. And the word community, the words call, intentional community are kind of buzzwords right now. People will say, I feel called to this. But Mike Wilker and I hope to look at those words of call and community, and what is unique within our Christian experience that brings us to community, not just in worship, but in other aspects of life. And knowing that we've all experienced many different types of community, look at the role of community in all aspects of our life. And to start, I just want to share a few things of unpacking these words of call and community, just for the purposes of this conversation. We could have many more definitions. But to look at the definition of church and its origin, it means we are a called out people. We're called out to be active people, not sedentary, not people that are just listening and receiving. But if we're called, what are we called out to? And in our baptism, that's where we receive our calling in life. And if you haven't checked this out already, Dan Erlander has been teaching this week on St. Francis, but if you see him in other sessions sitting in the back, he's often drawing, and his cartoons are just incredible, and his writing. And he has one book on looking at baptism, a manual for parents and children and sponsors, and it's in the bookstore. But he looks at baptism as our entry into the community of believers. And it's the mark, the welcome, the initiation. And that we receive our calling from that act of baptism, of welcoming into the family. And if we pulled out the Lutheran Book of Worship, and other denominations, I believe, have their own list of callings within baptism. But within the Lutheran tradition, we look at our baptism as being a covenant of that we are joining with those who are members of the body of Christ. And the words are said at the end of a baptism. The proclamation is made, let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. And as I think about those words of let your light so shine, that's where I believe our calling comes, is to let our light shine in the world. And a modern prophet of sorts is Frederick Buchner, who I believe is Methodist. Is that
Presbyterian?
Presbyterian, okay, excuse me. But he has a quote that is, I don't know if he's happy that it's used as much as it is and if it's out of context, but Parker Palmer refers to it a lot in one of his books, The Courage to Teach, and also in Letting Your Life Speak, which are two books that they have in the bookstore. But his modern take on what it means to be called is this, and our vocation or our calling in life is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. And I think that flows in nicely into our baptismal call, and that our call is something to put order to our days, a pattern to our days, as Dorothy and Susan have talked about the Practicing Our Faith curriculum this week. They talk about practices that are putting patterns to our days, but I also believe that our call and our the sense of community bring a sense of pattern to our days. And it's through our baptism that we learn how to respond to the call of Jesus to come and follow him and to serve our neighbors and serve one another. And with that, we are called to be workers in God's kingdom. I know this week people have been using the word culture, and I'm still wrestling with that word myself, but we're called to be the body of Christ in the world, called to work on behalf of God's deepest hopes for peace and wholeness in this world. And with those ideas, Mike and I were talking on last Saturday, and you were sharing some of your interest in some of Luther's works, at what is at the core of our ideas of community. And I hope that we can take some of what Mike has shared and what I've shared and talk about how important is community, intentional community, places like Holden Village or Lutheran Volunteer Corps, and how do they transform how we live in the world. With that, I'll pass it over.
Good. Well, you've been introducing the idea of call. I said I'm going to use this little board here. Now you can turn this way. So if call is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet, or call is more traditionally seen as something that in the verbiage of our baptismal or confirmation liturgies, like one part of the confirmation liturgy says that we're going to strive for justice and peace in all the world, respecting each person and their dignity. How do we live that out then? If that's what we've been baptized and then confirmed in doing, how do we live that out? Something that I used in my congregations that were helpful, it was something that I used that was helpful in the congregations where I worked, was referring back to what Martin Luther called the orders of creation. I like to call them communities of care because I think that's an easier way for us to understand them right now. And I'm going to put up four of those communities of care here on the board. Mm-hmm. And the first one is family. Marriage would fall into here. That would be one of those institutions, how we call it, an institution. Luther would refer to that as an order of creation. But you can think about family as being a community of care that you are created in, even called in, receiving your first call as a human being and as a Christian, and that you're also then called from your family of origin to create a new family at some point, with other friends perhaps, or with another life partner that you have. So their family is one of these four communities of care. It's going to be this. Another community of care that Luther says that each of us is called into is our work. That each of us has some work to do. It might be right in the household that we have work to cook the food, or that we have work to mow the grass. That might be our work that we're called to do. Luther and other Protestant reformers during the Reformation wanted to make sure that all stations of work were seen as participating in God's creative work in the world, and that they were as honorable as the priestly vocations or the religious vocations of being a monk or a nun. So, being a milkmaid was as honorable a way to live out one's call as the work of a priest or a nun. Same way with family, being a husband or wife was as honorable and godly ordained as being a nun or a priest. So there's this radical equality of all these so-called stations of life that Luther was talking about. And Calvin and other reformers also had this radical equality of all vocations or all work in life. Luther and the other reformers also saw another one of these communities of care being the civic arena. That each of us also participates as a citizen or a resident in a community, a political alignment of relationships, and that we each have responsibilities or God-given callings in that civic arena or community. And finally, well, one last thing about the civic one. Some reformers, like Anabaptist tradition, would say there are certain roles that Christians should not perform in the civic arena. When we get to the Mennonites, they said Christians cannot perform the role of a soldier, and they cannot be judges. There were certain things that Christians could not do according to the Anabaptist tradition. From Luther and Calvin, they said all of the stations can be fulfilled by Christians, but that the Christian ethic of loving God and a neighbor in need must inform the work. So a Christian could be a soldier, but you have to be a soldier in a way that loves God and serves your neighbor in need. That's the guiding principle for Luther in being a soldier or a judge. And then the fourth quadrant, or the fourth community of care, is the church. The church community. And each person in the church has a vocation, not just the pastor or the priest, but everybody in the church community has a call from God too. Sometimes it's true. At the moment of the sermon, you might have your vocation as being a listener and a hearer of the word. But you also, as Luther and the other reformers taught, in the mutual conversation of brothers and sisters, you become a means of grace yourself, whether you're clergy or lay. So everybody has a role or a call in the church community. I like this because sometimes we talk about vocation or the call as only what you do at church. Oh, I'm living out my call as a Christian by being a Sunday school teacher. And it stays here. But I don't think about how I'm an accountant and I work for Arthur Anderson. And my job is to be a CPA for this other company that we've been contracted with, and they're involved in this thing and that thing, and that doesn't have any relationship to my call as a Christian.
Does that country, does that start with an E?
Yeah. So, but Luther and the Reformers, and now the Roman Catholic Church too, would all say that's false. Your work as an accountant does have a Christian vocation to it. You might not know what it is, and the church community should be helping you discern what your call is in your work as an accountant, or as you're trying to decide what you're going to do in your work life. The church should be involved in helping you discern what your work is and how you fulfill loving God and neighbor. A fun thing about this too is that it's your work. You have responsibilities, but Luther and the other reformers would talk about this as these are the arenas in which God works through you. So Luther said, God milks the cows through the milkmaid, and the Father who's changing it, and he said the Father. Luther said, the father who's changing his baby's diapers is holding Christ in his hands. And so there's both the providential or creation aspect that God is caring for creation through our vocations in these four areas, and we are serving Christ in these four areas too. In our family, our closest neighbor in need may be our spouse or the child that we're raising in our family. So we have an opportunity in each of these areas to be serving Christ incarnate. And Luther said, this is where the family is where we learn to love our neighbor. That's our first schoolhouse for the practice of loving our neighbor in need. And we may be doing that more in these other areas eventually, or as we become more involved as an adult in these three other areas. So then I like to have people think about how they're called in each of these places, what their calling is at that particular time. If you have the overarching idea about call as your deep gladness and the world's hunger meet, or loving God and your neighbor, then what is it particularly? If I'm an accountant, what's the particular responsibility that I have right now? If I'm a son, as an adult, what's my role or vocation from God in caring for my parents and listening to my parents? So what's my role there? You might have a lot of different roles in this community of care, of family. I'm a son, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a grandson. Civic, you know, is where I might participate in making sure my public school is good and healthy and operative. I might be also a voting member of the society, so I get to vote, so I'm a voter, stuff like that. So then you can go through and discern and kind of use this grid or communities of care as a way to think about your call from God in each of these areas. There are times, like I said earlier, and what Stacy said earlier too, that we're called in these communities where we receive callings, but then we're also called out of specific communities. Like, I was called out of Freeport, New York, that civic community. From there, I was called to Washington, D.C. So now I'm in a new civic community, a new neighborhood. Still part of the United States civic community, but I received a certain call in Freeport as a civic person and was called out of that civic community, from that civic community, to another one. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're interested in opening up the conversation then, is how do each of you see yourself being called in one of these areas? Maybe we're going to share some stories here. How did you have an experience of being called within your family, for example? How were you called from long-term resident and community member of Holden Village into a new community? How were you called from your life at LVC to work as an accountant, again, I use that example, or as a doctor in Sioux Falls, South Dakota?
So. Before we go with that conversation, I'm just thinking of our standard practices or questions that we ask one another when first meeting. Where are you from? And to think about that, yes, you're in this, we're all here at Holden right now, we're all from somewhere else. But what would it be for us to realize that someone was in Freeport and is now in Washington, D.C., and that we are from a place and we've been sent forth, but to own where we are at right now, that it's a process. And I also think about, we ask someone, what do you do? We don't usually say, what do you do for a living? But that's what we're implying at some level, assuming that if you're an adult that you are working. And while I lived here at Holden, it was, I think right at the beginning of the school year, there was someone who led a Vespers. And for those of you who have been around here more than a couple days, you've probably heard the Holden speak of, hello, my name is Stacy and I serve the village as. And this person who I was living in community with at the time did a Vespers, and he introduced himself and said, hello, my name is, and I serve the village And we all knew that he served the village as carpenter. But he had a list that went on for minutes. I served the village as bus driver, as father, as hamburger flipper, as dish team captain, as community meeting minute taker, as stoker, and the list went on and on and on. And I thought, wow, we limit ourselves sometimes, and we might be asking one another the wrong question. If this is what we really value at the heart of our faith tradition and what we're sent out into the world. And so I just shared that as part of our conversation, to not be just thinking about what we do or where we're from, but the greater process of it all.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I've never been a part of an intentional community, mm-hmm. kind of full time. I've been in small groups that made intentional commitments mm-hmm. to each other in the world, but I'm curious where on the diagram you would plot an intentional community, like LBC. I look at it one way and I see it down there in the civic quadrant, or is it up at the intersection of, what would you say about intentional community relative to all of those callings?
I think that when I was in LBC, that my housemates and I operated more in the family quadrant in our household. It was a non-traditional family, and it was for a specific period of time. So it's different than a biological family or a family of choice that you make a long-term commitment in, like a marriage. But I'd say it's more there. And then each of us had our own work that we were doing in six different places. Some of us went to the same congregation together, others went to other places, and then our civic activities were different. So I'd say that was more like that. A place like Holden Village, in some ways you could put Holden Village as in the civic area, because when you've got 400 people, it's not so much a family as it is an actual neighborhood where, you know, you have different roles. Especially since you've got subsets of families actually here, and subsets of friends, and smaller community.
But that's something that I think about with Holden, maybe more so in the winter when there's 70 people here, who truly, there's a constancy more so than not of day in, day out familiarity. It's not a new person each day coming into the village in the same way that it is in the summer. But suddenly the lines blur, and maybe I see that they all kind of coalesce, because we worship here, but because we're a community of blessing, the ritual that we learn in church is done blessing the dish pit floor or at the bus. I feel that that is a experience of our life as Christians together, our farewells, all of that. Civic life blends into worship often when we do letter writing campaigns and other things. With our hunger awareness meal, that is part of our worship as well. And because we eat communally, I see the family, mm-hmm. sometimes family more than you want. I mean, 70 people is a lot of people to be family with day in and day out. And then there's some common work, and then there's some unique work. You know, I will never be the electrician here. I can almost count on that. But that same person that's an electrician, we're also doing dish team together.
One thing to remember, there are some challenges to Luther and the other reformers thinking about these orders of creation. And one of the challenges is that, first of all, Luther and the reformers, remember, were reacting against a monastic,
right.
elevated way of life, that was the religious, holy way. And they were trying to also argue for marriage, and specifically marriage between one man and one woman, being the God-ordained order of creation. Now, we have many ways of forming family that we, as many Christians, see as God-ordained. And we also have come to a point in knowing that marriage is also, because of divorce, sometimes for a certain time, not forever. Like Luther would say, it was forever. Mm-hmm. So there's debates around this, and also, I put it up there with all those caveats, and you can come up with your own cautions as well. There's also now, we have people who are retired. So what's that quadrant look like? Or the way that I started coming into this was looking at people who are unemployed and that they could find a job in the South Bronx. So then what's their work? What's their calling in that quadrant of life?
Job hunting.
Yeah, job hunting.
One of the things that I like about Holden is that sense of community, and I think it's so much easier to see it here than it is out there. When you're in the village, you know, everybody is part of that community and everybody has their thing that they do in the community. And if the kitchen staff doesn't do their kitchen staff thing, you're not going to eat. If the bus drivers don't do their bus driver thing, you ain't going to get hurt or you ain't going to get out. And you know, when we live out there, if I'm hungry, I'll just go down to Safeway and get something, take it home and cook it on the stove. And we don't think so much about, you know, all the people that went into getting that food into the Safeway store. But here you have to think about all of the people and the effort that went into that. And at home, you know, you turn on the light and you don't think about our utilities people who go up to the hydro plant every day and check everything out there and make sure everything's running. But when power goes out here, then we realize that we're a part of a community and that we have a utility person in our community. And I think it makes you more aware of, because it's a smaller community and you're more involved with the other people of the community, I think it makes you more aware of that. And I think that that makes you maybe a better person when you leave, or more able to see that community. And some friends of mine are here now, and they're fairly conservative people, and I think that they would say, you know, people need to learn to take care of themselves and that sort of thing. And I think it will be a good thing for them to be here and see this notion of community here, and then maybe we'll be able to relate to that out there.
I agree with you that it's visible here and that it's easy to, can be easier to enter into. And I've shared the story, I think, with one or two of you, that I, after living here for 3 years, I moved to Hyde Park in Chicago. A big transition. And my I don't know why I decided this, but I decided to live alone my first year there. I think I was afraid of living with just one other person and not knowing them beforehand. I needed to have some safety there, you know, that it was chosen. And so I lived by myself, and I found in that time I was a little bit sloppier in my recycling because I didn't know who was picking up my garbage. I might have left the heat on a little bit more often because it was in the rent. You know, I didn't have to worry about it. I didn't have to think about what our power source like is in, at Holden in the winter. But on my first or second night of living in Hyde Park, I lived right down the alley from the fire station, and there was a fire alarm, or the fire trucks were leaving at 3 a.m. or something, and I jumped out of bed and stood there, and I got my pants on, and I was trying to figure out, okay, which hose house do I need to go to, and am I on turnout this week to be on fire brigade, and I couldn't remember. And then I looked around me and realized I was in Chicago, and that the fire department would take care of that. But that first year being away from here, I realized for me that my life became a lot more sloppy, and I became a little bit more apathetic at times when I wasn't a part of community. And how that in the middle of the night I could be woken up and said, where is my community? What's my role in it? But with time, how that disappeared. And so I feel like I need to find community if I'm going to bring my gifts in the best way forth and support those of others. The accountability factor is a part of it that's important to me.
Well, I think, I mean, in response to that comment, Jim, in our culture, the notion of vocation mm-hmm. has gotten so small and so individualized. Mm-hmm. And maybe community has too, where we, unless we're really conscious, we tend to think of community as the group of intimates mm-hmm. with whom we surround ourselves, mm-hmm. birthday parties or something like that we describe as our community, and now reclaim our interdependence. And I mean, you think of the unemployed in some ways to be aware that the way we all live together affects unemployment and creates unemployment for others. And that's significant, and that there's a corporate responsibility, a corporate ability to respond when somebody is unemployed. It's not just their individual problem. Mm-hmm. An intentional community, I think, helps you see that, that interconnectedness.
Mm-hmm. Have any of you been sent forth from a community to that the particular community that you were a part of saw gifts in you or supported you to do, go elsewhere in the world to do something else?
Well, when I left this country to become a foreign missionary in Madagascar, mm-hmm. that was quite a change. I became, left my family world apart, mm-hmm. halfway around the world, and I became, well, became part of the family, community over there. Mm-hmm. And there were adjustments, but there were mentors, there were the other ones who that were experienced, had been there, that could mm-hmm. kind of act as parents or as aunts and uncles and help to transition.
Mm-hmm. And what I find interesting too is that before you went to Madagascar, it wasn't only that the people in Madagascar might have been calling for someone to do your work or to be a missionary there, but that your call to do that new thing was formed in the community in which you were living already.
Well, yes.
Your family and church community.
My grandmother was always very interested in missions and prayed for missions and missionaries. And then I went. My pastor was the one that advised me when I was seeking some direction to go to Bible school in Minneapolis. I was living in Iowa, and there I heard about the worldwide call and need for missionaries, for nurses especially. I was already a nurse, and that, so there was the direction.
When the last time that we moved, it was for a call that Paul had, and it seemed like a good family decision to respond to that call, but one of our daughters, who was a junior in high school at the time, said, "How is it that you sense this call?"
Huh.
And I don't sense that God is calling me in that direction at all. Uh-huh. And to be perfectly honest, I've struggled with that some too in times when it has required a geographic move. You know, it's like, oh, what is the call? Mm-hmm. And or how do I respond to a call, you know, at this time? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it does become complicated mm-hmm. when it's not just your own individual call, but you have a family with a calling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're making decisions as leaders in that family mm-hmm. that will affect the whole, all of the members of the family. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I resonate with that. I also resonate with how disagreements in the same community can come because people are hearing their call differently. Mm-hmm. When I was at seminary, I was a student. One of my classmates was being I put this very pejoratively, he was being attacked by the church because the church thought that he was gay. He was not out. There was no evidence, whatever that would be, that he was gay. He wasn't dating anybody, male or female. But he gave a sermon that kind of sounded like Herb Chilstrom's sermons. And so then, anyway, he got called up before a committee and had to defend himself. And I was livid. Here my friend was being attacked by the church, and so I became one of the student leaders to support my friend. His name was Bill. And I was helping our student body write letters to the other seven Lutheran seminaries so that they would know that this had happened. I was helping organize letter writing campaigns to Bishop Chilstrom at the time so that he would know what was happening. And Tim Lull, who was a professor and the dean of the seminary at the time, I didn't think was doing his job to support my friend, student. And I was like, "What, Tim, why aren't you, you know, doing this thing or that thing and blah, blah, blah?" And he called me aside and he said, "Mike, one way to think about this is that we have different vocations, we have different roles in this situation. Mike, your vocation here is as Bill's friend, as his classmate, as a student in the seminary and in the church. Those are your roles. And you need to live out that vocation that God is giving you to the best of your abilities and with the best discernment possible. My vocation is to be the dean of the seminary, a pastor of the ELCA, and as a leader in the church in another sense, too. And I'm trying to live out my vocation that God is calling me to do to the best of my abilities to fulfill those roles that I have been given. And by both of us, Tim had a great confidence in that if we live out our call to the best of our abilities and to the best of our discernment, that the best results will come. And so he wasn't saying to me, "Stop, don't be doing these letter writing campaigns." He might give me advice and say, you know, if you make too much of a big deal about this, it's going to go in the wrong way. But he couldn't tell me exactly what my vocation was. He might help me discern it, but it wasn't his role to be a student or a friend to Bill Kunisch. His role was something different. And that's helped me in a lot of other areas in my life. In the church right now, some people's vocation as voting members when they get to that churchwide assembly this summer, they might have a vocation of needing to work out a compromise. My vocation is not to compromise. My vocation is to, in this instance, to say this is where the gospel invites us to. And I feel comfortable in that. And I feel comfortable also that other people have a different vocation. Bishop Hansen right now has a different vocation in the church than I do. And if he fulfills his vocation to the best of his abilities with the best intentions and discernment, and if I do my role, then the Spirit, God's providence and creative and redeeming word will be lived out. But we might disagree, like you and your daughter may have disagreed in that decision. But she was living out her vocation as your daughter by saying, "I don't think that's what God is calling me to do. You know, we got to live with this. How are we going to work this out?" And to give voice, you know, to where the call is coming from is helpful.
Nancy Easland acknowledged that in her session yesterday too, when she was talking about her vocation in terms of creating space for people who are disabled, mm-hmm. creating access and validation for their call as ordinary human beings, mm-hmm. advocating that their life experience would be seen not as extraordinary but as ordinary, mm-hmm. and how in her own family it was contentious. And that we don't honor the call by diminishing the contention we feel. Because in any one, you even feel that in one quadrant, where my my father passed away a year ago, and so my role as a son, you know, 30 years into my adulthood, is enormous, all of a sudden. Much bigger than it's been for 30 years. And tugs at all the other roles while we work through this transition. And you certainly feel those tugs between family and work. Sometimes work and civic responsibility, where Augustana College has called me to a certain vocation. And there are political involvements I might feel called to in Sioux Falls that Augustana would not be honored by or fear that they, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's often.
I think about the, with our title of called in, from, and to. And let's say your example of working at Arthur Anderson. Let's say you're an accountant there, and you go, after that, you go to work for Microsoft as an accountant. The call to go back and visit Arthur Anderson, it's not there in the same way as it may be for us to go back to the communities that have formed us of who we are in our Christian practices, in other aspects of our civic life or our family life. Mm-hmm. And I think that there might be times where we might not want to go back to our community that first formed us because we don't agree, because now that we've left there, we've gotten a new perspective on life. And I think back to my, when I was doing Lutheran Volunteer Corps, my home pastor asked me if I would come back and talk about Lutheran Volunteer Corps. And I thought, great, I'd love to, in my hometown of 10,000 people. And he asked if I would do the sermon at that point. And at that point, I hadn't decided that I was going to seminary. I was thinking that I wanted to do something theological, but I wasn't sure. Just canceled my med school applications. And I told my home pastor, I said, you know, I'm going to have to talk about the fact that I work in the AIDS community. Is that okay in this small town in northern Minnesota, that to name that in church in my message? And he said that was totally fine. And I identified that it was because of how I was brought up in this church. That's why I was doing Lutheran Volunteer Corps, mm-hmm. because this community sent me forth out into the world. And I asked my home pastor, I said, is anyone impacted by AIDS in our community? It was the second largest church, the Lutheran church in the synod. He said, no. Flat out, no.
And what year was this?
This was in 1997.
Oh.
And I knew that he wasn't lying to me or trying to cover anything up, but pure statistics alone, public health statistics, told me that that couldn't be true. And so I shaped my sermon, or my message, that I, first time that I had spoken from that pulpit in my home congregation, not knowing that I was going to seminary at that point. And I talked about being sent forth from this community, out into the world, and when I come back, the door was always open for me, always welcoming. And I shared stories of the people who I worked alongside in the AIDS community, who told me stories of sitting down in their small rural Montana town, and the word had gotten out that they had AIDS. And people literally getting up from the pew that they'd been sitting in and moving to the other side of the church because they knew that this person had AIDS. And all of a sudden they're sitting alone in their church. And I shared stories like that. Well, after church that Sunday, I went out into the narthex or gathering area, and the assistant to the bishop was there, and he was my pastor when I was a child. And he asked me, when are you going to seminary? And I'm shaking because I'm not, I'm never going to do that. What if he's in, I guess, you know, why would I be standing in the pulpit if I was never going to do that? But meanwhile, another man came up to me and he said, I'm the only one. I'm the only one. And he walked off. And I had never met him before, never seen him. And then he came back a little while later and it was really crowded and you could tell that he wanted to talk. And so the assistant to the bishop stepped aside. So I received a call from someone in my community at that point. Have you ever thought about seminary? And then this man came in and said, I'm the only one. I'm the only one in Carleton County right now with full-blown AIDS. And I found myself saying, huh, there was a reason why I came back to my home church. And I needed them. I couldn't just go out into the world and never come back. Different from Arthur Anderson and Microsoft. But this church wasn't affected by AIDS. And in the weeks to come, I got letters back in Seattle from our church council president, from our choir director, from different people in our church, leaders in our church, who were affected by AIDS one way or another. And most days I would say I resist going back because there's different beliefs there. But I'm seeing the importance, because when I went back and shared of what I was doing, that's the moment that I received my calling of what was going to come next in the process. It was by those two men standing there, not one more important than the other. And so I don't know if it's been hard for you to go back to places that have shaped you at times, that you want to deny that they were a part of your life before. They say a prophet's not never welcome in their hometown. I don't know.
I'm thinking about the forum the other night, Tuesday night, and the talk about surprise. And I do think that you experience the surprise that the call takes you somewhere you're not expecting. Again and again and again. Or an experience opens a door that shapes them.
It's part of our baptismal calling to go back and say thank you, to practice gratitude, and also share what we've seen, because some people aren't moving to another place and are just waiting to hear what you've experienced over there.
In the story that you told a little bit ago, I was kind of struck by the notion of the temporary community. You were in a community that was called to defend Bill, and some of those people probably didn't know each other, weren't family, didn't work together, but they were in this temporary community who was called to defend Bill. And, you know, maybe most of the people have never seen each other since then, but for that time and for that purpose, they were a community.
And if you've ever been on public transportation, when an emergency happens, it becomes a community in a way that is, I won't go into the whole story, but we went to Hong Kong November of, what, 2002? So it wasn't that long after 2001, and it was a 12-hour flight from Minneapolis to Tokyo. We were about 6 hours into it, and you could start to feel that the plane was going down. And suddenly a voice came over the loudspeaker that just said, flight attendants, prepare for landing. That's all it said. And so when a flight attendant came back by, we said, where are we landing? 6 hours out west of, well, we're landing in Anchorage.
They turned around.
And why? Well, there's a belligerent passenger on board. And once we were past Anchorage, there was no place to land till Tokyo. Wow. And so we got, the design was that they were gonna land, and we landed. They didn't even go up to the terminal. The law enforcement folks came out and got this person off the plane, just like that. And then the captain came over, gave us the more details, and said, we've just gotta fill out some paperwork and we'll be back in the air. Well, when they did the investigation of the person that had gotten off, he threatened to be a terrorist. So by the time they got, then the FBI had to get involved. By the time all of this happened, our flight crew was out of time. So we were landed overnight and had to put us up in Anchorage at 7:30. But what happened to this group of people, you know, talking about a temporary community, We learned all about each other's families and did all of this talking going back and forth, because by the time we got into the terminal, we were on CNN. This flight that's down by an alleged terrorist, da 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 da. It was amazing, though. And what is our calling there? I suppose some sort of supportive processing this. It was a wild.
There's a new novel, I don't know if you've heard, any of you have heard of it, Tokyo Canceled, and I'm forgetting the author's name. He's from India originally, but it's about this flight that was canceled because of a snowstorm, and basically the whole, the WTO or some national international trade organization was meeting in Tokyo at the same time, and the snowstorm was coming, and no one could get out of the city, so there was no hotel rooms available. And so there was a select few people that had to remain in the airport until the next flight came. And it happened that there was someone from almost every continent that was left. And they started sharing the stories that they had been passed down from their family. And some of these are epic stories, fairy tales, just told from different national perspectives. And but they formed community, and they just went, and each chapter is the next person sharing and trying to make it through the night in this airport.
Terminal is a movie that does the same thing.
Say more about that.
Well, it's the character whose country is overthrown while he's in the air. So by the time he lands in this other country, his passport is no longer valid. But he doesn't have a country to go back to because it's been overthrown. So he takes up residence in an airport terminal and builds community.
He's still in the Paris airport, if I'm not mistaken. I think I did a search on his name.
Well, he was allowed to. They finally released him after something like 24 years, but he didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's where home was.
Well, if I can come back to your Anchorage experience, talk about the instant community, I think you might be able to also discern, if you wanted to, how each of those four areas was operating. That I think you said you two were traveling together.
Right.
So you were still family in that setting. There are some people that had particular work that they were being paid to do, and others who might have started to do volunteer work to help the community, you know, handing out blankets and da 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 da. And then there's the civic, you talked about the FBI role involved in this and the other investigators. So, and what were your roles there as kind of global citizens in this action that was being taken place on a civic level? And I bet there were people praying. And there was, the church was evident there too. And that even if it had gotten to a certain stage, you might have really put on your role as pastor, as a leader in the church that way. Suddenly being there. So that's a way that it can happen, and all four of these areas can be existing. In a global community, another little caveat here is that Luther and the other reformers would say these quadrants or these communities of care or orders of creation are embedded in creation so that everybody's part of it. But now we know not everybody is part of the church. So that's another challenge to this, is that this was formed in a Christendom era. And so if you're not part of a traditional church, but you might be Christian, what's your role then? Or if you're not Christian, what's that part look like? There's some more work that needs to be done, but at least in our Christian congregations, this could be helpful. But if you're going to help them discern it or use it as a discernment tool, you might have to unpack that a little bit more for some people too.
My daughter lives in New York City, and she said after 9/11, people started speaking to each other. She said within 6 months, it was right back to where it had been. 6 months.
Although in the biblical witness, God is often using outsiders as part of the church's story. So I think that still fits into the church realm. Luther would not define church as only the institutional church.
Correct. Another thing that I said earlier this week, too, is that from Luther and many of the reformers, we got about 4 more minutes.
I'm sorry, I'm just...
You can write on the door. You can pull the screen down.
Okay.
Is that in the other areas of our life, and we can talk about that church area, but it's definitely a place where Christians and non-Christians are working together. And Christians might sense a certain vocation that comes from being creedal, you know, I believe in the Trinity, and this is where my call is coming from, and this is why I'm a husband and how I'm living out my husbandly duties. But they could be married to someone who's not Christian, or they could be working alongside of or have a boss or an employee that is not Christian, or be in a civic community where the prince is Muslim and you're Christian as a resident in that community. So you don't have to have all Christians forming these communities of care. And that's a Reformation understanding and principle.
I'm thinking about realizing that there are some people in this room that have done Lutheran Volunteer Corps, some people that have lived on staff here at Holden for different amounts of time, and some other people that are in other forms of intentional community. That these communities that we may be a part of for a year, a couple years, a couple decades, or for a lifetime, that those that are shorter may give us the resources to remember these aspects of things more clearly. As I gave the example of being sloppy in my recycling when I didn't know who was doing the garbology. But is it Wes Preve who's attributed with saying, the ride up is free, the trip down is costly? I think we have that in some of the buses now, that we are welcome to this place of Holden, this intentional community, no matter how long we're going to be here. But the cost in going back out into the world and living that, maybe not with the same support structures around us, it is costly and it involves risk. But we're called, all of us eventually are going to be taking this bus down back out into the world to try to figure out how to live this outside of this framework here.
I think that the notion of community out there is going to become much bigger. I've been reading a lot about peak oil, and you know they're not going to be able to keep pumping it at the rate that it's being pumped, and there's more and more people that want it. One of the reasons really that has, one of the things that has destroyed our community is this, all this excess energy that we have, this oil, and you know, without that I couldn't get in my car and go somewhere else. I would have to stay amongst my community. And you know, like the average piece of food that American eats came 1,500 miles before it got to your plate. And when we no longer have the energy to do all that long distance transport and so on, then more of our food is going to come from local. And if I'm going to be a cattle rancher, let's say, I'm probably not going to be able to grow vegetables or whatever. And so, and it won't be a matter anymore of going down to Safeway and buying those things. It'll be a matter of finding that person in my community who will be growing the vegetables, and he'll be looking for the person who is growing the cattle, and everybody will be looking for the person who can, you know, fix whatever machinery they have or whatever. And it won't be a matter of just going down to Walmart and buying a new whatever. And so we're going to become, whether we like it or not, we're going to become more involved in community in the near future. And you know, what I've been learning about what this is going to be like, I mean, in some ways it's scary, but in some ways it's like we would be living like the Amish or something, you know. And in some ways that's a very good thing, because it's going to change the nature of community.
Well, thank you for being a part of this conversation, and may the conversation continue out there, and may the hope and curiosity about community that brought you to this time continue to burn within you in the days to come. Thank you.
And you stay safe.